So this is a very special week. On Wednesday, it was the appearance day of Lord Nrsingadev. So today's class will be about Lord Nrsingadev and a bit about our relationship with Lord Nrsingadev and what is the benefit for us of worshipping Lord Nrsingadev. So there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, which I'll sing for you. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jaste Jaste Avira Virbhava Vajraka Vajrangsha Karmashayan Randhaya Randhaya Tamagasagas Om Swaha Avayam Avayam Atmani Bhuishta Om Sham. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrsingadev, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruit of activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. So what stops us from performing devotional service to Krishna is that we have demon-like desires for enjoyment in this material world. So who can help us with that is Lord Nrsingadev. And because we have these material desires, therefore we have fear. We have a struggle for existence to satisfy our desires. And within that struggle, there is fear. So unless we're completely freed of desires, we can't fully engage in service of Krishna. So we need to always offer our prayers to Lord Nrsingadev. I have a story here from Mayapur. This is a Lord Nrsingadev book, Pastimes. This is the Nrsingadev in Mayapur. And this is what he looked like when he jumped out of the pillar. When Prahlad Maharaj was challenged by his father said, "Is your God in this pillar? Otherwise, so let him come out now. Let me see him protect you." He was ready to kill his five-year-old son with a sword. He was ready. And he said, "Let's see if your God will protect you now." So as soon as he said that, he smashed the pillar with his fist, and out from the pillar came this exact Nrsingadev, very fierce. So if you want to see him in person, you can go make a trip to Mayapur, and then you can see this beautiful Nrsingadev. Of course, he's very kind to his devotees. So one Russian Mataji, who was living in Mayapur, she used to make tulsi garlands for Nrsingadev every day. And being pleased with her, Nrsingadev's pujari gave her one of Nrsingadev's nails. So he has these big, long, sharp nails on his fingers. So she got one maha nail. And so she put it under her pillow that night. And that night she had a dream that Nrsingadev had come and was sitting on her bed. And the Lord put his fingers with his long nails inside her heart. And he pulled out something black and said, "You see this? This is not love. This is lust. And there is still more there. What shall I do with it?" She didn't know what to say, and then her dream broke. So the next day she went in front of Lord Nrsingadev and said, "Throw it far away." So we want to get free of this black substance in our heart. And Nrsingadev is the one to do it. Now, Hiranyakashipu was the perfection of a materialistic person. He had everything you could desire. He had the whole universe, actually, under his control. Even Narada Muni, even the demigods were serving him. And he was, so you would think, well, he must be happy. But was he happy? No, he wasn't happy, because there was one thing he could not control. He had the demigods, he had everybody in the universe. Of course, he couldn't control his son Prahlad. Besides Prahlad, there was one thing he could not control. Can anybody tell me what that one thing was? His senses. His senses, right. He could not control his own senses. So he was a slave. He was a slave to his senses. So therefore, he was not happy, although he had the whole universe. All the planets, all the stars, the sun, the moon, everything was under his control except his senses. And so for him, everybody, his conception of life was, "I am God, everyone should worship me." So he was challenging when Prahlad said, "No, he was, Prahlad said, I am worshipping Lord Vishnu. He is the Supreme Lord. So his father got very angry. So I want to see your God. Can you show me God? And so many people, they used to challenge Srila Prabhupada, can you show me God? And Srila Prabhupada said, well, the problem is you have some eye disease. There's a disease in your eyes. You have cataracts, so I have to make an operation on your eyes, and then you can see God. So Prahlad Maharaj, he could see God everywhere. He could see God in the pillar, he could see God in the floor, he could see God. He could see Krishna coming to him. Sometimes he would cry when he would feel that Krishna was going away, and so he would laugh, or he would dance when he would see Krishna coming. And so he was always seeing God. And Srila Prabhupada also, he was always seeing God. But one time, one hippie came to his lecture, and this hippie thought that he was definitely God. And he was dressed up in a big black cape, down to his feet, with moons and stars, like he was under the control of the moon. He was controlling the moons and the stars and the sun. And he sat in front of Prabhupada with huge long hair, listening to Prabhupada's lecture, and he was glaring. He was just glaring at Prabhupada. And so at the end, he glared and he said, what about Buddha? So Prabhupada said, what about Buddha? To him. And he stared right back. So then that person said, can you see God? So Prabhupada said, no, you are in the way. Because he had such a huge false ego that he was blocking everyone's vision of God, trying to block out, thinking that, no, here, I am God, I'm the center. And then another one, in Australia, he said, he also said to Prabhupada, I wanted to tell everyone that I am God. Here in this program. And so Prabhupada said, okay, so let's see, show. And so the person said, okay, not just now, maybe tomorrow, I'll show everybody. So he was just bluffing. And Prabhupada said, well, you know, you're not very special. Everybody here thinks they're God. Everybody thinks they're the center. So what's so special about you? So the guy was defeated, you know, what could he say? And everyone comes here thinking that they are the center. So Hiranyakashipu was the same. You're talking so many times about God. Okay, today I'll teach you a lesson, and I will kill you and let your God come and save you. So, of course, Nrisimhadev burst out of the pillar, and he saved his great devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, and he killed Hiranyakashipu. So then after everything was all over, and Hiranyakashipu was dead, and Nrisimhadev was pacified, then what did Prahlad ask for? Nrisimhadev said, you can have anything you want, any benediction. And Prahlad said, please excuse my father, please liberate him. So that is the Vaishnava, the compassion of a Vaishnava. Now in Mayapur, when this Nrisimhadev first came, they were asking Pankajangri Prabhu to worship him. And Pankajangri was saying, no, I'm too scared, I can't worship Nrisimhadev. And to worship Nrisimhadev, you really have to follow very strictly the four regulative principles. You have to be a naishtik brahmachari your whole life. And so if you're not a naishtik brahmachari, means you never had any sex life, then you cannot worship Nrisimhadev. So they said, oh, maybe you're not following the four regulative principles. Is that why you don't want to worship Nrisimhadev? And he said, no, of course I am, but, you know, I'm just scared. And then he found out that any deity that comes to a holy dham, to the place, he will take on the mood of the presiding deity of the dham. So the deity of Mayapur is Lord Chaitanya. So if you see Lord Nrisimhadev in Mayapur, he's very sweet. Especially you see this when he's full of chandan. He looks like a little cat, very smiling. Now he's like this. It's Chandan Yatra now for 21 days. So if you go to Mayapur, you'll see Nrisimhadev very sweetly smiling. You know, he's changed from before to after. And he will have a sweet smile on his face covered with Chandan to cool him down. And for 21 days, they keep putting on Chandan. And so, although he's very ferocious, he's just like a lioness with his cub to the devotees. So he's very ferocious to the non-devotees. And there was one experience. One non-devotee came to Mayapur temple, somebody's father. He didn't want to go inside. He refused to go into temple. But somehow they made him just come to the doorway, and there he saw Lord Nrisimhadev. And he went a little bit closer, and they were just finishing an aarti. And they threw water from Lord Nrisimhadev, and he got some on him. And he told his son later on, it was burning me. This water was burning me on his body, because, you know, he's, you know, eating meat and everything. And then, but later on, he got purified, and he bought a book, and he started reading it. And so this is Lord Nrisimhadev. So with Prahlad Maharaj, he was just like a lioness with her cub. And it's described that when Prahlad Maharaj bowed down before him and offered respectful obeisances, then Nrisimhadev picked him up, put him on his lap, and he started licking him just like a lion licks her cub. So it was quite a scene there. All the demigods were there. None of them could pacify Nrisimhadev, but Prahlad could do it. This little boy at the feet of this Nrisimhadev. So there is one verse also from Bhagavatam I'd like to read. Satat karaspasha tutakila shubha sapadya vivyakta paratma darshana tapar padmam hridi nivrita tata hishatanuklina hridashi lochana. By the touch of Lord Nrisimhadev's hand on Prahlad's head, Prahlad was completely free of all material contamination and desire, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. And all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body, his heart filled with love, his eyes with tears, and he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord. And so it's very interesting. Prabhupada says that although he was born in a demoniac family and demoniac blood flowed to his body, he was cleansed of everything just by touching Nrisimhadev. So we sing every day, Tava kara kamala pare nakam adbhuta shingam dalita hiranyakashipu tanubringam. So we sing the lotus, he has a lotus palm. Tava kara kamala pare, his hand is lotus. But inside that lotus, nakam adbhuta shingam, there is very sharp nails. So have any of you ever seen a real lotus flower? I've seen so many. And they're so sweet and soft and beautiful and fragrant. You don't find anything hard like nails. So here is a very interesting example. Although his hand is like a lotus, inside there's these very sharp nails. And so for the devotee, you get the soft lotus on your head. And for the non-devotee, the nails come out. They come out and they get the non-devotee. If the non-devotee threatens the devotee. So he used his hard nails for Hiranyakashipu, but the lotus was for Prahlad Maharaj. And Srila Prabhupada said that now we don't see Nrisimhadev coming out of the pillar, but we can have the same benefit that Prahlad Maharaj had, the same facility of having the touch of Krishna. And how do we do that? It is by chanting the holy name. Kali Kali Namarupe Krishna Avatar. That the holy name can come, it can dance on our tongue, can come inside our ears, and go to our heart, enter into our heart. So we chant like a child crying for its mother. Then we get the same benefit that Prahlad Maharaj got when Lord Nrisimhadev touched him on the head. And one of the prayers of Prahlad is, when will you call me to your lotus feet? I'm so afraid of this life in this material world. When will you call me to your lotus feet? So Prahlad was not afraid of Nrisimhadev. Nrisimhadev was very fearful. His body touched the sky. His hair, the mane on his hair was throwing the airplanes into outer space. And he was licking his lips. He had a tongue that was also razor sharp, and his nails were very razor sharp. So he's very fearful. But Prahlad was not afraid of Nrisimhadev. However, he was afraid of this material existence and the material desires. So we need the mercy of Nrisimhadev to get free from material desires, which are keeping us prisoner here in this world. And sometimes devotees, some people say, oh, why are you worshipping Nrisimhadev? This is Vaikuntha Bhav. This is, we want to go to Goloka. So Panika Jangri, the Pujari, says sometimes people misunderstand our purpose in worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. And but Lord Nrisimhadev, He is particularly inclined towards devotees of Radha and Krishna, and he's the protector of the Sankirtan movement. He's Krishna himself, just appearing to reciprocate with our desire to remove all the obstacles in our devotional service. And so if we can always raise our hands and call out with great love, Nitai Gaur Radhe, Radha Govinda, Radha Madhava, that's wonderful. But if there's something in your heart that's stopping you from that spontaneous call, why not go in all humility before Lord Nrisimhadev and pray with his sharp nails he may pierce those crooked desires in your heart and throw them far away. So this is his main function. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed, I will pray at the feet of Lord Nrisimhadev to purify my heart and give me the desire to worship Radha and Krishna in Navadvip Tham, free from all obstacles. At that moment, by Lord Nrisimhadev's mercy, I will exhibit symptoms of ecstatic love for Radha and Krishna, and I will roll on the ground by the door of Lord Nrisimhadev's temple. So he will help us to go to Radha Krishna. When Shivas Thakur was worshipping his Nrisimhadev deity, Lord Chaitanya came to him and he said, Shrivas, don't you know I'm the same person you're worshipping behind those closed doors? And Advaita Acharya, when he was calling Lord Chaitanya to come down from the spiritual world, he was offering tulsi buds and Ganga water, and he was worshipping a Nrisinga shalagram to call Lord Chaitanya to come down. And that shalagram is still there somewhere in Bengal. So Prahlad Maharaj, he is the symbolic representation of a Vaishnava. He's Smarnam. We have our nine processes of devotional service. And he is the example of Smarnam, always remembering Krishna. And when he was offering his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, and he said to Lord Nrisimhadev, my Lord, my father has committed so many offenses, please give him liberation. So then Nrisimhadev said, why do you worry about your father? Your father's father, his father, 14 generations, they're all liberated because a son like you is in his family. So this is a benefit. And Srivati Siddhanta Saraswati said that when a pure devotee is born in the family, his ancestors and descendants for 100 generations are elevated. So the devotees are more merciful than the Lord. Now, so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta has said that if a pure devotee appears in family, then 100 generations before, 100 generations after are all liberated. So Prabhupada's family is, Prabhupada was born in that family, so everybody will be liberated. When a devotee, a madhyama, a middle devotee, a preacher, is born in a family, so he's between the lowest and the highest, the middle devotee, his ancestors are for 14 generations are liberated, and those who descendants. And when a neophyte, a beginner devotee, a kanishta, is born in a family, his three generations of ancestors and three generations of descendants are liberated. So there's hope. Even if we're just neophyte devotees, just beginning, we get three generations liberated before and after. Now I want to tell you a story about one devotee's mother, Indradyumna Swami, how she got liberation, even though she never Indradyumna Swami never knew that she took up devotional service. So this is how it happened. Indradyumna Swami wrote this in one Bhakti Gayathri article. I tried my best to help my own mother in spiritual life. Unfortunately, throughout most of her life, she never showed the slightest interest in religion. I once asked her if she believed in God, and she replied, something maybe out there. Whenever I visited her, we would often debate the existence of the soul, life after death, karma, and similar topics. Throughout the years, I continued cultivating that little something in her heart by sending her Srila Prabhupada's books, which invariably ended up in a pile at the back of her garage, collecting grease and dust. A few years ago, she telephoned me late one night. It was an unusual hour to call, and I was surprised to hear from her. She began the conversation by asking if I would take her to Vrindavan, India. I was shocked. I thought, Mother wants to go to Vrindavan, the land of Krishna's birth. What is this? How does she even know what Vrindavan is? But she insisted and wanted to know when we could go. Although intrigued at the prospect of taking my mother to Vrindavan, because it was late and I was very tired, I told her I'd call her back early the next morning and we could discuss the matter in detail. I woke up refreshed the next day and after my shower excitedly dialed her phone number. My brother answered. I said, "Pete, can I speak to Mom?" There was a prolonged silence and I sensed something was wrong. Finally, his voice, choked with emotion, replied, "Mom passed away last night." I was stunned. "What happened?" I asked. "I talked to Mom only last night," he said. "I know," he said. "She had been battling cancer for 6 months. She didn't want to tell you." Collecting myself, I said, "Cancer? Did she say anything at the end?" "Yes, she did," he replied. "She said, 'Don't lament for me. I'm not this body. I'm spirit soul. I'll never die. I'm going to Krishna.'" With those words on her lips, she passed away. I couldn't believe it. My mother, the intellectual who never went to church, who never inquired about God, debated his very existence, was going to Krishna. I asked my brother, "But how is it possible Mom said those things at death?" He replied, "When Mom learned she had cancer and was going to die, a strange transformation came over her. She became restless and unsettled. She began asking about you, wanting to know where you were and what you were doing. She had an intense desire to meet with you, to speak with you. But when I suggested calling you, she'd always say, 'Oh, no, don't bother him now. We'll contact him later.' One morning, I went out to the garage to empty the garbage, and I found her going through all those books you had sent her during the past 25 years. That afternoon, she carefully dusted them off. For the last 5 months, she just sat in her rocking chair reading those books. Sometimes she'd underline a certain passage or quote that had particular relevance or importance to her. She also contacted your tape ministry in London and ordered all your lecture tapes. She'd listen to them on her headphones, rocking back and forth in her armchair, looking at your picture, which she kept on the table nearby. She must have listened to at least 3 a day. Gradually, her condition deteriorated, but she wasn't afraid. I think there was something in those books that made her fearless. Then last night, she sensed she was going to die. She told me to call you. Her last request was, you take her to a place called Vrindavan." I put the phone down and cried, not out of mundane sentiment or attachment, but in appreciation that my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, had extended his mercy to my mother and delivered her from material existence. I went home for the memorial service in a Rinpoche estate. Just before I was leaving to return to Europe, my brother and sister approached me and asked me what they should do with her ashes. Remembering my last conversation with her, I smiled and took the ashes with me. Several weeks later, one of my disciples placed them in the sacred waters of Jamuna River in Vrindavan, India. I had fulfilled my mother's last request to me, a request that I pray will also be on my lips the day I leave this world. May the land of Sri Vrindavan, where Subala and the other wonderful cowherd boys, who are all dear friends of Sri Krishna, play, where Lalita and the other splendidly beautiful young gopis, filled with love for Srimati Radharani, enjoy transcendental bliss, where Sri Radhakrishna thirsts to enjoy wonderful transcendental pastimes day and night, become manifest in my heart. So that is what happens to the mother of a devotee, that she was actually delivered. The time of death. There's another story actually in here from this Mayapur book. If I can find it. Yashoda Mata's 85-year-old foster father. During his stay in the hospital, Yashoda Mata prepared a tape recorder and played the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra all day long in his ward. Her foster father was actually in semi-coma. But miraculously, when he heard the Maha Mantra, gradually he awoke, and with closed eyes, he appeared to enjoy the music and the sound. In fact, I just read Prabhupada said that if you're in coma before you die, that means you're so sinful that they're counting up. It's taking a while to count up everything before you leave your body. It's taking a long time.
Count up the sins.
Count up all the sins. So if you're in like a coma. So when she played the Maha Mantra, he woke up. He started to follow the tempo, tapping his hand on the edge of his bed, like this. Bum, 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 bum. And he looked like he was totally meditating on the Maha Mantra. Suddenly he spoke. "Look, there's a huge five-clawed man, and his head looks just like a lion's. He's coming into my ward. Don't you see him? He's coming." The foster father, still with eyes closed, said, "Oh yes, I forgot. You all cannot see him." but he's really here. I do not know who he is. At that moment, Yashoda Mata and her daughters looked at each other in great surprise and said, Father, he is Lord Nrisimhadev. What, Dev? I don't know him, but he's nodding his head to tell me that he is. Yashoda Mata felt great ecstasy in hearing this, for in her house she keeps a model of the Nrisimha deity from Mayapur, and had been offering heartfelt prayers to him so her father could leave the body without any attachment and that his soul can become Krishna's devotee in his next birth. Continuously, her father said, Look, he's smiling at me and starting to speak again. Oh, he's telling me that I have to learn to chant what you are chanting now. What exactly are you chanting? He said. Yashoda said, It's a mantra to call the holy name of the Lord. And he said, I don't know what mantra, but please teach me. So she said, All right, Father, please repeat after me and listen carefully. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yashoda Mata taught her foster father word by word patiently. Without taking a long time, he learned and tried to chant, and chanted so nicely. The next day, he passed away with tranquility. During that weekend, we devotees congregated to do the kirtan for Yashoda Mata's father at the funeral service. Yashoda Mata prepared prasadam garland, ganga water, tulsi, and put tilak on her father, which have all been done nicely and properly according to her Guru Maharaj, His Holiness Giridhari Swami's telephone instruction. Her foster father's face looked so peaceful. His cheeks were a little pink and his body was soft. After some ceremonies, the body was sent to the cremation. A few hours later, the people who work in the memorial service came to us and exclaimed in amazement, We have never seen anyone's ashes look so white and beautiful like jade as your father's. What happened to him? What were you chanting for him? Could you write it down for us? We want to learn, and we think we can also chant while doing our service here. There at the cremation. So this is why the Lord himself personally appeared before someone who we consider is not a devotee, proves the Shastric statement that if one is always engaged in devotional service of the Lord, all their family members will be benefited as well. So we should all try hard to follow in the footsteps of Lal Maharaj, chant Hare Krishna. Even the child can take part, even the old man. And we will benefit, and all of our family members will also benefit. And that is the teaching of Prahlad and the example of Prahlad Maharaj, whose father was liberated by his service, by his being a pure devotee of the Lord. Do you have any questions on this? Yes.
I just wonder how much importance would one give to certain dreams, you know, you were talking about Indrajana Maharaj and his mother.
Yeah.
But my mother was thinking about the father, I didn't know about Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in Vrindavan, I used to often wish that she had known about that, but she hadn't come here. Then one night I dreamt that she's actually chanting. She had big red beads, and she asked me what you say. And it was very clear, she was there, she's kind of a very shy person. And I was saying, Hare, and she was saying, Hare. And then she got to the end of the mantra on this beat, and then the dream finished. And I told someone about it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very exciting. And they said there used to be big red beads.
Yeah, that's how they were in the beginning, yeah.
So I thought...
Satsri Maharaj had those beads. And
so how much credence would I give to that? You know,
yeah, it can be. It can be quite... That's how they come... that's how we see them now. They will come in dreams. And so it's quite... especially if you're chanting Hare Krishna in your dream, it's very it's very auspicious.
Yeah, I passed the mantra on today.
Yeah. You're her guru now. Yeah. So now you're her guru.
All right.
Yes.
Is it an eternal leela, Prahlad in the Sringa?
Yeah, it's an eternal leela. It comes every day in the Brahma's day. It comes every day in his life. It comes. And you can see, if you look in the Puranas, there are many different ways that he comes. Another time... Shingadev, he didn't know, this time he came out of a pillar, one time he came flying in on Garuda, and one time he came on Kaliya, riding on Kaliya.
Shingadev on Kaliya?
Yeah, on Kaliya. Kaliya became his horse, like his chariot. I mean, there's many different versions, if you read the Puranas, so it's different days of Brahma, different kalpas, and he comes in different ways. It is a leela that keeps on going. Yeah.
Is is don't Nisheng an immediate expansion of Krishna? Is it 100% of the qualities of Krishna? Or is,
yeah, my understanding is that he's Vishnu, but according 94%. But according to Jananivas in Mayapur and Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj in Mayapur, he's Krishna, 100%.
Yeah,
According to them, according to them, it's 100%. According to my understanding, it's 94% Vishnu. They live there, so perhaps they have some realization of Nrisimhadev over there, that he has revealed to them that there is one lila here, actually here that I can read you that, where it sounds like he is Krishna. Let's see if I can find it. Oh yeah, here it is. The father of one of the devotees of ISKCON Youth Forum used to argue with him, saying, "Why do we have to worship Nrisimhadev when Radha Madhava are here?" The boy tried to make his father understand that Krishna and Nrisimhadev are non-different, but his father was not very convinced. During Nrisimha Chatushi 2003, this boy, along with his father, came to the temple and was watching Lord Nrisimhadev's Abhishek ceremony. Suddenly, the boy's father saw Madhava's face in place of Nrisimhadev. He turned to Radha Madhava, and again he looked back at Nrisimhadev and found Nrisimhadev's face as Madhava, still. This continued for about 20 seconds. In this way, he realized there's no difference between Madhava and Nrisimhadev. So yes, if you will ask those residents of Mayapur, they will say, yes, he's the same as Krishna. Lord Chaitanya once did appear as Nrisimhadev in his lila, and he started running down the streets, and everyone was so, even devotees were afraid, and they started getting out of his way. He really wanted to kill the demons, and he was in that mood of Nrisimhadev. So yes, it's possible. He's also one of the Dash Avatar, 10 avatars. Nrisimhadev. Yeah.
This is just a detail, but you know, he said he had a lotus. He has a lotus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hand, but
with nails.
He has nails, but if you look at the cat, they have the nails completely inside.
Uh huh. Yeah.
They're retractable, and it seems.
They're
like
retractable.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a nice soft. Pad.
Yeah.
But then if it gets angry.
Yeah, the nails come out.
So it's probably like that.
Yeah, yeah, like those switch knives or switch blades.
It's
It's for the non-devotees and they're out. So we want to be friends with Nrisimhadev. Yes?
Sorry, I don't mean to sound offensive, but what if an atheist or an agnostic said to you, you know, the story. Lord Chaitanya and Nitya and Jagai and Madhe.
Jagai and Madhe, right.
I can't remember what.
What
if the drugs struck?
Nityananda, yes. Madhai.
Blood came out.
Right.
And what if an agnostic said, well, blood's a material substance. Is this material blood or spiritual blood? Is it spiritual blood, but it's in the material world, but it's just for the sake of pastime?
Yeah,
his
body is spiritual.
It's
correct. You are correct. It's spiritual. His body is spiritual.
Yeah.
So if he manifests blood, it is for the non-devotees to see.
But his body is actually.
His body is actually spiritual.
Fully spiritual.
His body is spiritual.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why Krishna, when he left this world, he left a material body behind, although he doesn't have a material body.
It's just my Kali Yuga mind.
It's for the Kali Yuga people, yes.
My tank brings up these speculations. And
For people who who don't believe, then it's for them to see, yes, he's just like me. He has blood. But actually it's not like that. It's different. He could go and swim with the crocodiles in the Ganga, Nityananda. And they didn't bother him. He could do so many things. His body was not material body. But for them, they had to see what the damage they did, those two. And so, yeah, it was there.
Can I ask another question?
Okay.
How would you answer Professor, there's a famous atheist scientist called Richard Dawkins.
Oh, yeah.
A book called The God Delusion. Basically, in a nutshell, he's not really trying to directly say there's no God. I'm trying to prove that there's no God. Mm-hmm. He's saying is that the very concept that of one thinking that there is a God is a delusion. Mm-hmm. He's only kind of one of these kind of atheists.
I heard somebody's writing a book. You told
I haven't
me?
Actually read
my
the book.
My master is writing a book in answer. Yeah.
Okay, there is a book coming out. There's an answer to that. So you can read that book by Maheshwar.
Maheshwar
in Ishra.
Maheshwar from Ishra?
Yeah. Yeah, so you will get that. You read that book, and then you.
I think it's called The God Conclusion.
Yeah, that's
yeah, so he's writing an antidote there. So you read that book, and it will.
Is this guy's reading for the people?
Yeah, well, the fact.
What he's saying is, well, God, but he's doing it in a different way.
But the thing is this, that just the fact that he's talking about God means there is a God. I mean, otherwise, there would be nothing to talk about. If,
yeah.
If it's, you know, if there is no God, then, you know, why waste your time? Why talk? So he's, I mean, he's really talking, he's talking so much about God, that proves there's God.
The identity of an atheist is based on...
Yeah, his whole identity is that is based on God.
Atheist.
The idea of God. So if there were no God, who would he wouldn't have an identity.
Well, did he get any benefit then from that later on, that the way he come?
Well, if he said the name of Krishna, he'd get benefit. If he said the name of Krishna, like Krishna does not exist, then there would be more benefit for him.
I've seen that some scientists in England, some professors, they actually turn from atheism towards theism at the end of the life to convert something.
Of course.
They actually convert to Christianity because they say there's something hollow or empty in their life or something.
Yeah, they have nothing.
Them off to become
well, they realize they don't know where they're going and death is coming. Prabhupada said the atheist will see God as death. Death will come. God will come as death to the atheists. For them, death is God because they have no control over that. And that's
really
how God
scary.
Will come.
Death is scary, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's scary. They have no control and that proves there's a God. The God. And he will come to them as death. They will see him. Like there's that famous, I don't know, you heard about it. There's this philosopher Nietzsche. So there was on the wall some graffiti. God is dead. Signed, Nietzsche. And then somebody else wrote, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. So God gets the last word. And they may say God is dead, but at the time of death, then finished, all their words, and God gets the last word. So they will see, Hiranyakashipu saw God is death. And everyone, all the atheists, will see God at that time. When the prophet said, when the handles of the clock are finished, they will see God. Okay, Hare Krishna. I think it's time for RT,
yes, exactly.
The bell.
Launch.
Okay, good. Hare Krishna. Thank you.